Hi, I'm Emily Roger, host of the Boiling Point podcast. My co-host, Dave Vail, and I will bring you thoughtful discussions with leaders who are positively impacting our world. This is the Boiling Point, where leadership and inspiration meet.
So we are pretty well into 2024 now. Are you a New Year's resolution guy?
No.
Same. I was going to say, like, did you, like, now kind of looking back, did you follow through with it? That's the beautiful thing about not setting them. We followed through.
Well, I kind of believe in setting goals, not just at a certain time of year, right? So I don't know, for me, and I think for people to do it, great, you know, if that works for you. It just hasn't really been a big motivator for me. I find, you know, when I kind of land on what I'm trying to accomplish, and so even stuff like we would set goals around our fiscal year, which is different than the calendar year. So yeah, something about that December 31st, January 1st, it's a nice time to reflect, I guess, on what's happened. But yeah, I'm not a big New Year's resolution person.
Same. And it's this thing of like, yeah, goal setting all along, but just to pick one because it's the new year, that's, yeah, not me. So Dave, all the times that we have had hockey guests on, where we've still spoken about leadership, we've still like, and I do like hockey, but today we are like, I'm taking one for the team and we're going straight into the fly fishing industry.
In a deep way, based on what I'm reading here. And I'm looking forward to learning because, I mean, this is something you do all the time. And I'm just realizing there's levels to this. And I'm at not even a surface level. Like I don't think I've ever tried fly fishing, believe it or not. So this will be a really interesting conversation for me in terms of that piece of it. I know there's some really other neat elements that we're going to touch on as well.
Yeah, no. And this is someone who I've thought about, you know, inviting to have him onto the podcast for quite a while. And was recently at a lodge in Brazil that he's also a partner of, and was listening to the guides and the way that they spoke about him and spoke about his leadership style and his care and his compassion for what he does. And I thought, that is a conversation that listeners need to hear. But it was one of these things where it is, when you have people talking about someone who is not in the room, they don't know how close I am to him. It's nothing that's ever going to likely get back to that person. But when they can just speak, have such positive things to say about someone, like, that speaks volume. So with that, today on the Boiling Point, we have my dear friend, Rodrigo Salles, and he's the co-owner of Untamed Angling and the CEO of the Brazilian operations. And the waters of his home are no more, no less than the rivers of the Amazon jungle. He is actually the one who introduced me to fishing in the Amazon, and I've had the pleasure of fishing with him there. He was born in Brazil, and Rodrigo found his career working in the Amazon in the depths of the indigenous rivers. He had access to truly virgin waters in the Amazon and got to know more deeply the indigenous people who ancestrally inhabited them. He has been fishing there his entire career, exploring waters and other remote freshwater and saltwater destinations, but the jungle is his favorite place. Through Untamed Angling and with his business partner, Marcelo, they created the unique concept of community-based tourism in indigenous territories in Brazil. Being the first company in Brazil to have approval from FUNAI and IBAMA for tourism projects in indigenous areas in Brazil. Since 2008, its expeditions and operations have been at the forefront of jungle fly fishing and, most importantly, community-based ecotourism. He created the concept of world-class lodges and services in some of the most remote places of the Amazon. Rodrigo, welcome to the Boiling Point.
Thank you very much, Emily. Pleasure to have you here. Nice to meet you, Dave. It's such a pleasure to be here and talk with you a little bit more of what we do, and both in the Brazilian and Bolivian Amazon, and what we love that it's working with the natives in the jungle. Thank you very much for the invitation.
Yeah, and Rodrigo, where are you calling in from today? Are you home in Manaus?
Yes, I'm in my home office in Manaus, which is our Brazilian headquarters of our operations here in the Brazilian Amazon. Manaus, it's a huge city. It's a 2 million people city, right in the middle of the Amazon. So it's a quite unique place to live, and also it's really important as a logistics base to all of our operations in Brazil.
Yeah, and so Dave, for more context, I met Rodrigo on my first time fishing in Brazil. I was at his lodge, the Rio Marie, and so behind him, Dave, you can see there's a, looks like a peacock bass, if you move your head, yep, a peacock bass on the wall. So that is the type of fish, Dave, that I was going after with Rodrigo. So we're fishing the first morning. This is like my first time down there. I am just in complete awe, have no idea what to expect. He makes this cast up against the bank, and this peacock bass just like smashes his fly. And then his, what pound fly line did you have on? It was like
60.
And it just like blew up, like just snapped. And the fish took off. And I was like, what did I just sign up for? Like, what is happening?
Exactly that. And you know, Emily, there's something, you were a fly fisherman, you know what I'm talking about. For us, we remember way more the fish we lose than we land, because all the fish we land, it's okay. It's a photo. It's a one battle. But when we lose it by exploding a fly line or losing the fish, we never forget. So that fish, I will never forget. And it was my first big fish with Emmy fishing together in the Rio Moriá. And it was a good introduction for Emmy to the powerful creatures in the water, in the Amazon rivers. Yeah, true.
Yeah, from that moment on, I was like, I was at the bow of the boat, Dave, and I was like braced, like athletic stance of like waiting for like this freight train.
For the layperson here that wouldn't be as knowledgeable in fly fishing as we've clearly articulated earlier, what happened there? Like when you talk about smashing a fly and like what actually happened?
Well, we were fishing together, both in the same boat, in the same skiff, casting towards the bank with all our fly fishing gear, with the flies, an imitation of a small fish, because we're fishing for the peacock bass. The peacock bass is the most emblematic and the most important fish in the Amazon watershed in Brazil that we can catch on a fly. That is that mount that you can see there. So it's a fish that can reach up to 30 pounds. It's a trophy fish in the Amazon waters. And Rio Moriá holds really record size fish. We have up to 14 HFA world records there on the fly and so on. But we were just in the first morning of the first day, just warm-up session. We're not even expecting to have that kind of thing. I lost many big fish. In fact, I lost more fish, big fish, than I landed, which is normal considering this kind of species. The biggest one, you eventually can land one, but they can really, really fight hard and explode a liter of 60 pounds. We are talking about a 20-pound fish with the strength to explode and to break a 60-pound line, you know, monofilament line. So do this energy and the strength, this fish can run really fast back to the structure, and you need to stop it. So that moment that you need to stop the fish to run back to a structure where you can tangle and make a mass, and you lose the fish, obviously. You should control the fish, and you should fight with the fish with your fly rod. And that fish just got my fly, run straight by the side of our skiff and run in the opposite direction. And the fly popped like nothing, like it was just a 5X fine line of trout fishing. And that was the introduction of Emily Roger to the fly fishing in the Amazon. And I remember she looked and said, wow, that's what I'm signing for this kind of battle. And I've been fishing for 25 years, peacock bass in the Amazon. So I say, yeah, let's do it. And then
that's the
way the trip started.
Trial by fire.
Yeah. Exactly.
So, Rodrigo, obviously, I know you very well. And so for our listeners and for Dave, I would love for you to speak more about Untamed Angling and what community-based tourism means.
First, our company was founded, my business partner and friend Marcelo, back in 2003 in Argentina, with the idea to find the real best and truly gems of fly fishing in South America. At that moment, we didn't have any idea where we will reach nowadays. If I went back in time, when I met Marcelo and we started the company, we had a goal to find the real best places and provide the best service possible in South America for the fly fishermen coming to visit South America, but not looking into the trout rivers of Patagonia. I'm born and raised in Brazil, grew up fly fishing in the jungle. My grandfather told me all about outdoors. He was an amazing outdoorsman, hunter and fisherman. And I grew up fishing in those warm water rivers of Brazil. Same as Marcelo in Argentina. We're not those trout fly fishermen style. We came from another school of anglers. And that's what was our idea in the beginnings, to create possibilities for anglers comes to South America to explore more than just the Patagonian rivers and the trout fishing in Patagonia, because we have so many native species, amazing native species that we can fish in South America. And the two most emblematic ones are the peacock bass in Brazil and the golden dorado, also in Argentina, Brazil, and Bolivia. So we start to explore and try to find the real best places where we can catch those species, being untouched, wild, unspoiled rivers. And what we found was those places are really hard to find in that way I grew up fishing as a child with my grandfather and same as Marcelo, because the impact of the progress in the South American rivers were amazing, especially the construction of dams, hydroelectric power plants. They changed everything in a course of 20 years. I'm talking about between the 80s and the 90s, both Brazil, Argentina, and other countries in South America, they leave this boom on the hydroelectric power, main source of energy, and the rivers were a sequence of dams and all impacted directly on those species and fisheries. So what we saw is the best places are not anymore in the northern Argentina or southern Brazil, where we grew up. It's in the jungle. It's in the Amazon jungle. It's in the marshland of Pantanal in Brazil. And then we start to explore those places. And also, what we found, it's not as protected as we imagine, due with all the treatments we have in the Amazon jungle that everybody knows, the deforestation, illegal mining, logging, everything that's happening there, and you see every day in the news was happening 20, 25 years ago. But what we found was the real secret rivers and untouched places are inside the indigenous lands. The indigenous lands in the Amazon are the most protected areas by law, because they are indigenous territories protected by the government of Brazil, Bolivia, and other countries on the legal Amazon area. And then we found out, okay, if we want to know these places and visit these places and eventually fish these places and open and lodges in those areas, we must understand first how these natives live, how they work, or how they want to work, or what are their dreams and their goals for the future. And then we start to travel to a completely different area than the tourism or the sport fishing that's understand about these communities. I'm a civil and an environmental engineer. Marcel is an architect. So we decided to quit our main business as engineer and architect to really swim deep in this pool of the Amazon and these rivers and these areas and these lands and understand how these tribes live and how they can partner with us. And Dave and Emmy, we didn't have any idea how to start. We just had a dream. We just had a goal. We knew where we should go and what are our the end of the line. Okay, our dream is to establish a partnership with the natives, build a lodge, and can bring people to work here with us, to fish with us and work with the natives. But we didn't have any idea. And then we started to connect with the important people in this journey. And I think we had luck. We knew where we want to go and want to reach. And we work 24/7 for several, we still are working 24/7. But anyway, we were moved by our dreams and transformed them in reality. And then step by step, even without knowing where we should go, we keep moving. It's like you were opening a path in the middle of the jungle. You just have a compass that would use you go to the north, but you need to open a new path that it's completely unknown. And we were the first company in South America to work in partnership with the natives in the Amazon jungle for tourism purposes. We were the first one in Bolivia, the first one in Brazil. In this journey, we even need to sit with the government and talk with them and say, you don't have a law for that. You don't have a regulation for this kind of activity. Can you do it together? That's what happened in Brazil. In Brazil, the government didn't have any kind of regulation for allow tourists to get into the indigenous lands in the Amazon. And step by step, we are working with them to create this possibility that was 12 years ago. So it's recent. It's not a thing that happened 25 years ago. We are talking about 10 to 12 years ago. So that's, in a nutshell, our way, how we are right now here, and I'm here in the Amazon.
Thank you. That's really helpful. I come from Northern Canada, and you have a lot of Indigenous friends, and so I can appreciate, you know, some of the challenges, I guess, you know, making that, you know, creating that partnership maybe and connection. I'm just curious, like, what do you think helped you be successful maybe where others weren't, Rodrigo, in terms of, because I'm imagining, you know, you had to build a certain amount of trust and people needed to know that you know, you weren't there to exploit, you're there to partner. So I'm just curious, like, how you know, and that's an easy thing to say, but it's a completely different thing to do, at least from my perspective.
Yes, I think I have this question many times, and I always think about how it was since the beginnings. And it's nothing more than build relationships. And build relationships based in what you trust, in transparency, and what are your goals on that. Trying to explain in the clearest way what you want there. And with the natives in the Amazon, that's even more rough, or how can I say? It's like, it's pretty much like explaining something to somebody that don't know nothing about it. But by the end, it's not only that they should trust you, they should believe and they should understand you first as a friend, as a partner, and then as a long-term partners, that something that you should keep day after day. As any kind of business or personal relationships is the same. With the natives, we first try to understand their culture, because there are many things that are different than our way of life and our Occidental culture. We're moved to understand how they live, what's the meaning of quality of life for them, you know, was what they want as persons, as goals, and in terms of each individual person or the community, the village. So, and then we start to understand that that's pretty much different than a common business, pretty much different than a common business, than just buying a piece of land and building a lodge, like most of the fly fishing industry do. That's just find a nice river, a good property that you can buy it and build a lodge and set your tourism operation there. With the natives and in their native lands, we should understand how they live and respect that in first point. And then as invited by them to be there because it's their land, we cannot buy a piece of land in indigenous territory in the Amazon by the Brazilian regulation, for example. So they should invite you to be partner, but you are coming to present them an idea and a project. And the way you do it, it's the most important thing. I have seen many times other entrepreneurs, not only in the tourism or fly fishing, trying to do something in the Amazon, and most of them fail because they don't understand how people live in the Amazon, what their goals, what their culture. So that takes time. For example, in Bolivia, it took us 3 years to understand how they live, what they want. In Brazil, with the Caiapó villages, 2 years, you know. So it's a long process.
Yeah, and Rodrigo and Dave and I, Dave's a leadership coach as well, and you just hit on three topics that it's like, gosh, if all leaders, which we are all leaders, but especially of organizations and businesses could like really get these concepts down. Of you spoke first and foremost about cultivating trust, and the trust has to be there. And then relationships, everything is based on relationships. And then speaking of culture, and what you said and the way that you worded it, which was so beautiful, is that it is their culture. And you finding out what it is that they want and need, and how to be able to preserve that in order to then partner to create something together, which you have done so, so beautifully. And is that something like within your culture that trust relationships, like were you just brought up and kind of born that way, or is that something that like you have kind of learned to really cultivate over the years?
Well, obviously it comes from where I came from, my education, my parents, especially my grandfather, and especially during all these expeditions and trips I made with my grandfather. We went to places that nobody else had touched before in the Brazilian jungle, and the way he respect the landowners, being natives or not, doing any kind of business, he used to work with buying and sell cattle, and then had some coffee fields. And he was very simple in the way to treat people, and in a way that he always told me, you must respect anybody from top to bottom, from bottom to top, equally as your most loved ones, you know, because if you separate in classes, if you separate them in styles or for the people you like most or not, people you see you as selective. Don't be a selective. Treat everybody in the same way. Being the one that it's helping you to fix an engine or the president of your country. Treat it in the same way. And with that, I grew up with that. And that's the way we start to talk with the natives, to sit with them, to eat in the ground with our hands and sleep in the dirt in the same way they do, and respect that as their culture. And they cultivate that and appreciate that in a genuine way, not doing something for a second purpose or because you are looking for another thing. You must live in their way. You must live their way to understand what is that, you know. And then we start to value things in a different way. As same as we come back to our homes and we start to value that we have a mattress or we have sheets in our beds and it, most simple things. And they live in the jungle in that way. And they don't complain. They don't complain from nothing. One thing I learned from the natives in the Amazon, they never complain from any kind of situation. Could be raining, pouring raining in the middle of the jungle. They are without clothes. They're in the middle of a hunting expedition and a fishing expedition. They never complain. They're always happy because they are alive and they have the opportunity to be there. So I start to learn with them and then start to use also the part of their way of life and their culture and they see things in life to all other aspects of my life. And then I start to see that it's the most simple and genuine way to live.
Hi, I'm Steve Yerko.
And I'm Tara Sands. Now available from Maji Media is our new podcast, 4Kids Flashback. 4Kids is the company who brought you the English dub of Pokemon in the late 90s and so many other shows like Yu-Gi-Oh!, Shaman King, Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, Kirby, the infamous One Piece dub, and so many more.
We'll be talking to the people who worked at 4Kids. Actors, directors, writers, editors, producers, engineers, you get the point. And hopefully get the answers to questions both you and I have about the company.
I actually worked there as a voice actor on some of the shows.
And I was a kid watching the shows and remember way more than Tara does.
And thank God for that. Steve is actually a professional storyboard artist, which gives some really unique insights into anime and animation. Subscribe today wherever you get your podcasts. That's the number 4Kids Flashback.
So I'm just trying to imagine all the work that went into developing these relationships. And I really appreciate what you're saying about the approach. And it sounded like, you know, like what I'm hearing is it had to be very genuine, you know, like you can't have ulterior motives because they'll at some point show up, especially if it's a 3-year experience,
yes.
Right?
Like, yes, especially in business.
Yeah, right. Which it's interesting, right? Like, so, and you were successful. And then, so you've been doing, who are your customers? What's the kind of ideal or the kind of common customer that would come and stay at one of these lodges?
Nowadays, they're mostly North Americans, Europeans. Obviously they're in a well position financially. They are eager to explore, travel the world. understand more about different places and cultures. They require some levels of comfort and everything. That's why we create that possibility, because in the past, there were many other outfitters offering an Amazon adventure. But for the common public, the travel, when they hear about the Amazon, the first thing that comes in mind is, oh, I've been eaten by mosquitoes or biting by piranhas or caimans, the giant anaconda will drag me to the water. That's what mostly the television sells every day about the Amazon. It's not like that, but obviously you need to have good facilities to have people interested to travel and spend a week with you in the Amazon, not just camping on the ground and things like that, what we did in the past. So we create nice facilities to provide for the general public possibility to visit those places. So our average client, it's like that. It's a person that value the experience first, and then the comfort, and then the amenities and accommodations. But the first is the experience, being in such wild and remote places, in the middle of indigenous land, really remote, where there's no roads, there's nothing there, no cities, nothing around, and be one of the first to explore those waters and understand. And not only about catching fish, it's about the culture, it's about the jungle, it's about the people you meet in this kind of trips, and that's our kind of public.
Is there like a common experience for people? Like I'm wondering, they go down, and maybe this isn't happening, but you know, maybe they're going down for a certain experience, and then something kind of emerges just through, you know, the interaction, the location, the remoteness, like all these sorts of things. I'm just wondering, like, do you hear things from your customers that maybe they weren't expecting?
Yes. Well, first, anglers, fishermen, and driven by the fish. They want to go in a place that you can have the best possibilities to catch lots of fish or a big fish or the challenge of a specific species you have in that place. So we are anglers, so we're moved about that. We're the first thing that drive us to a certain place, being in the Amazon, in the Caribbean, in the Indian Ocean, is the fish or the fishing or the experience on related with the fishing. But then when, especially here in the Amazon, when anglers come with that mindset of catching fish and getting their challenge completed in their bucket list and blah, 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 they find themselves in the middle of the most amazing jungle in the planet, those amazing rainforests, the wildlife, and obviously the natives. When they start to see and to understand how those natives still live in the jungle, still live there in those places, then they have a truly different feel of the whole trip. And then the experience is completely different than just traveling to catch a fish and take a photo of the fish. That's the most rewarding thing in our project. It is when people end their trip and the last day in the common car, they just tell us that was a life-changing experience, because that's only the best thing I can hear. It is that we're providing them an experience that is changing the perspective of life, or it's providing them a different way to see things. And that's way more than just having fun and catching a fish. It's experiencing those places in the jungle and the people that live in the jungle.
For you, Emily, was that the case?
Yeah, absolutely. It is. It's the fish, I think, initially that can put a destination on the map and bring you to them. But then the destination ends up being so much more about the fish and just the experience of it all. And even with So this summer, I'm hosting a few groups down to some of Rodrigo and Marcelo's lodges, and which like filled up so quickly that actually Rodrigo just opened up another week for Simone because there's like just so many people wanting to go, and you guys are like, gosh, booking up so fast. But on one of my weeks on the Rio Marie, which Dave is one of the lodges in Brazil, a couple who are good friends of mine, who they've traveled with me before, and she has tried fly fishing and just doesn't really care for it, and that is totally fine. But they are coming to the Rio Marie with me. And she is so excited about it. And she's not an angler. She has no intentions of picking up a fly rod, but she is going for the pure experience of it. And the fact, Rodrigo, that, you know, your lodges of like, yeah, they're very fly fishing focused, but it provides, yeah, an experience for non-anglers and anglers alike.
That's our perception all over those years. We are completing 15 years in Bolivia, and in Brazil, 12 years. It is that people that come and they say, that's way more than just a fly fishing travel experience. That's way more than I expected. Not only the fishing aspect, but I'm talking about the whole experience, you know, the place and the people that you meet in these areas. And that's where we start to think, wow, that's not only about the fly fishing. It's about those places. It's about really keeping those places protected and how we work in partnership with the natives in a truly genuine way, because we are 50-50 partners in all of our places. We're not paying a fee or have the rights only to work. We are 50-50 with them. From beginning to the end, obviously we are the entrepreneurs, we are the investors, we are the ones that operate and create the facilities and sells and manage the whole thing. But also we involve that in all level of decisions. That's why I live here in Manaus. I'm traveling many times to the villages, to the communities, to talk with them, to make board meetings with them, to decide together what we're doing in the future of our operations, from season rates and improvements, everything. And then we start to see that there's lots of people coming and say, I want to bring a friend that's not a fly fisherman or not an angler at all, or I want to bring my wife or my kids or my family. And then you start to see that those projects, they can turn way more than just a fly fishing tourist lodges. They can be open for those other experience that takes your breath away from the point that you were there. And it's exactly when I remember when I reached all of those places for the first time. Way before start getting the water and fishing, you say, this place is amazing. Just itself by the location, by the river, by the jungle, and the people that lives here, it's amazing. The fishing, obviously, it's our goal, it's our purpose, and it's important thing in our business. But just the location, it's amazing. And Emily experienced that in Moria and last year in Simone.
Piraruku.
In Piraruku, and Hope Canyon pretty soon mm-hmm. as well. And you see that each location in Amazon is different because they're different geographically located. It's like being in the west of Canada, in the east, in the central. The Amazon have that. And then we start to see, well, we can start and open another activities in our lodges that not only related to the fly fishing, so the ecotourism, the interaction with the natives, respecting them, obviously not creating activities with the natives, but interacting with them. And that's definitely our next step, because we saw that naturally, as Emmy give a good example of people that's not even in the fly fishing and want to go and want to come to visit our destination. So we are coming and preparing this with the natives for the next step, that's opening our venues for non-angling activities as well.
What would those activities be? Just out of curiosity, because that probably would appeal to me.
Hockey, pond hockey.
Oh, wow.
Well, field hockey in the jungle.
that would be an experience worth investing in for sure.
I can promise you hockey, but soccer, I can promise you.
I love it.
Well, and the bird watching, like on the Rio Marie.
Bird watching is amazing, and it's another big niche on the tourism. The fly fishing is a specific niche. It's very small. It's very small. Compared with a conventional fishing, that's not our target. The fly fishing is a very, very small market. But then when you go for bird watching, you go for ecotourism, then you have a massive quantity of people that are looking for those kind of experience. And from what we saw, especially after the pandemic, is people value way more being outdoors. Now, I can say you, the pandemic was really tough to us. Obviously, we're closed for 20 months. But after that, and this last year, 2023, was the very first year we felt the same bookings and levels as pre-pandemics. But what I felt it is people are looking to genuine experience outdoors, more than just traveling to New York, Paris, or London. You know, they're looking to explore the planet, the world, because the pandemics gave us that sensation that everything can end pretty soon, you know. And we don't know. We don't know the next decade, the next 5 years. We don't know the next year. So what I see now is people want to do this kind of experience and really be in those wild and remote places of our planet. And we in the Amazon are one of those places. We are lucky to have nice facilities and provide good logistics to host people there. And that's our next step, our goal for the next coming years.
I love too, just that you are able to and continually breaking down the misconceptions that we have about places and how we can be so narrow-minded. And even for myself, when I first thought of the jungle and how so many people were like, you're going where by yourself and doing what? And like, because that is what you kind of know the Amazon to be, of anacondas and piranhas and just all this kind of stuff. Yet, like, when you, I mean, much like you, like, for you to be able to establish this operation, you had to go in completely open-minded and trusting yourself, your own intuition, as you called it, that like, this is what you felt called to do and this is what you want to do. And letting go maybe of whatever else from the outside world and those voices that were maybe saying like, well, Rodrigo, like you're walking away from an incredible career and you're an engineer and you're going to go try and open a lodge in the middle of where? Like, but yeah, when we just learn to, yeah, step out intuitively and trust and be able to see things for what they are based on our own experiences, not just what we're seeing or reading or hearing. And that, yeah, everything that Untamed Angling does and represents, I think fully taps into that.
Yeah. Thank you very much. But it's true. And I live that every single time that I'm doing presentations or even the shows. We're going to US now, and it will be my, I think it's my 15th year doing shows in US. And nothing changed. It's the same. People stop by our booth and they look to the photos and the videos and start to talk with us. That's in the Amazon. That's in the Amazon jungle. Wow. No, I can't go there. There's so many mosquitoes, piranhas, anacondas. So we always need to break this misconception that's normal, and we are used to do that. Say, we don't have more mosquitoes than Florida. We don't have more mosquitoes than Alaska. We don't have more mosquitoes than Texas. And obviously, you are in the middle of the jungle. You are not going alone, swimming, crossing the river, and walking in the jungle and be there for the whole day. You're guided. We have a facility. We have the boats. We have everything ready for that. But the jungle, it's way more friendly than the majority of people think. Right, Amy? You experienced that. You saw that.
Yeah. And Dave, just to kind of paint a more clear picture of that, like the Rio Marie, it's like that water is so acidic that it's basically sterile. Is that right, Rodrigo? Am I saying something that's not correct in that?
Yeah.
It's like I was swimming in it. Like, it's wild.
There's no mosquitoes there because the acidity of the water, the tannins of the water creates this acidity, and the water is black tea tannin. And that acidity do not allow the larvae of mosquitoes to close. So you don't have those noceums or biting mosquitoes around. So it's completely safe to swim, to stay in the sandbar. You know, I travel with my kids. I have a baby of 1 year old, and she stays in the sandbar with us. Obviously, we protect with the sun, but we're not worried about the mosquitoes or being in the water. So that's the kind of thing that people don't know about the Amazon. And I always said we have a competition against those channels that always try to show the dangerous things in the Amazon, you know. But that's fine. Once people understand that it's not like that, then comes the second step that's booking that trip and going that. So that's where we work hard to make it the easiest way possible, because we are traveling to the middle of nowhere. Even from us Brazilians or locals traveling to those places, if you don't do it in the right way, it can take you several days, you know, to reach those places. So we work in all of the best logistics to get all of our clients in the fastest and the safest way there. So we use charter planes, hydroplanes, landing in the water if there's no landing strip, helicopters now in Bolivia. So we are using any kind of vehicles and airplanes or whatever to make people get there in the fastest and safest way possible. And that's opening the gates for lots of people getting interested to come to say, okay, it's easiest than I thought. Well, traveling from US or Canada to the Amazon jungle is not so complicated anymore. The flights are getting better. So people are getting interested, but mostly when they see where we are in the middle of the nowhere, and also the lodges we have, the possibility to have an English-speaking professional guide where they can find comfortable with the idiom and do not need to speak Portuguese or Spanish or whatever. So we are creating new doors for these people. And going back, Dave, to your first question, where the activities on ecotourism, that goes from bird watching, canoeing, trekking and hiking in the jungle. There's some beautiful landscape you can explore. And doing that with a professional English-speaking guide, being a fishing guide or a biologist or ecotourism guide, but also assisted by a native that have the knowledge of these natives, what they have in the jungle, it's amazing. They know every single tree, every single plant, all the animals, and they know exactly what they are and why they are there, and they can explain to you what those fruits are, which animals are eating there, and the whole ecosystem, the whole chain that it's inside the jungle. And that's so amazing because it's a complex of all of the biomass, the animals and the plants that you have in the jungle that creates that ecosystem that lives in harmony. And those natives, they know everything about that, much more than any scientist that study that, because it's their garden. I say that the Amazon jungle is the garden of those natives. So they are born and raised there. They have those, and that's really important also. The natives in the Amazon, they don't have a writing language mostly. It's a oral culture. So it's passed generation by generation. And that's really important. If you destroy a community, or if they leave to, I don't know, work in the nearest town, you lose that connection. And all that culture will be lost. So what we are trying to do with our project, it's bringing people to their land and have them the possibility to stay, to have an economic, sustainable way of life, stay in their villages, getting trained, getting educated for a new activity, being a guide, being what they want to do inside the operation, because they work with us in different aspects, but mostly stay in their villages and keeping that sense of community together. So they don't need to leave to the nearest town and look for a job, which is really tough for them without the same education level that other people have in the cities. They can stay and they can live in their communities in the jungle. And for me, the most important thing is seeing that now we are the people that are going there, saying they are doing the right thing to protect those places. And that's the legacy for the natives, because they're being seductive or they're being invaded by centuries. And people that goes in their land mostly goes for the log, the minerals, the water, and just trying to put a money and extract that, take that from them. We're just going there saying, you're doing the right thing. Keep this place as it is. And with luck, we'll bring people from all over the world to come visit your place. And you see that you're doing the right thing to protect your place, protect your jungle and your river. And I think that's the legacy of our projects. And that's what we want to show to more and more people, not only related on the fly fishing business.
Yeah, to preserve and live in harmony is what really stood out to me and you speaking there.
Yes.
Yeah. Well, Rodrigo, I thank you so much for taking the time to come on here. And I know that we could chat for days and days.
Days and days.
As we have.
As we did in the past. And we'll keep doing.
And we'll be able to again this summer. But no, I really appreciate you taking the time to come on to The Boiling Point. And I think that there's just so many valuable insights and lessons, especially around, trust and relationships that we all can draw from. So I really appreciate you sharing. And so we're going to list all of your information and any extras that we discussed in the show notes. And the best place to find all of that is on our website. And for our listeners, we're active on LinkedIn, Facebook, and Twitter. And there will be a video version of all of us on YouTube and Facebook. And of course, the podcast is available on all of your favorite podcast platforms. Rodrigo, I'll see you in the jungle.
Thank you very much. See you in the jungle. Thank you for this opportunity.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening. Follow or subscribe to the show on your favorite podcast app or visit BoilingPointPodcast.com for more.
Produced and distributed by the Sound Off Media Company.
You looking to make the most out of this life and optimize your personal wellness? Then check out the Natural Man Podcast. Join me, host Mike C., as we explore all areas of human wellness, physical, mental, and emotional. Learn strategies to optimize your own well-being and be in the driver's seat of your own health. Remember, your doctor works for you. Learn biohacks, neurohacks, ways to improve sleep, and ways to optimize your body and your mind. Check us out on Apple, Spotify, the Fountain app, and at naturalmanpodcast.com.